been murdered. Other friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. And the bird said nevermore.
You're listening to The Call Podcast with Brandon and Josh.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new edition of The Call. It is a Baltimore Ravens podcast where we talk anything and everything Baltimore Ravens football. Thank you for listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player.fm, Overcast, and Google Play Music. Well, usually we start the show off and we review this past Sunday's game. However, breaking news happening today. We are recording on Tuesday, October 15th, and the Ravens have made a trade. They send Kenny Young to the Rams and a 2020 draft pick in exchange for Marcus Peters, a cornerback. Joining me, as always, we're not trading him away, my buddy Josh. What's going
That's
on, man?
That's good to know. We have a contract for life here at The Call, man. Dude, breaking news all over the place. And as we're just getting on the air, wonder why the Rams did it? Well, the Rams just landed Jalen Ramsey, my friend.
Really?
Yep. Like, literally, as I was signing on to do the call with you, it just blew up. Adam Schefter just tweeted, "It's happening. Former Jaguars Jalen Ramsey is being traded to the LA Rams for 2 first-round picks in 20 and 21 and a fourth rounder in 21. And Brandon, I already kind of knew this was happening. I'm not surprised here because, and look, I know everybody was like, hey, as bad as the secondary was here, right? Everybody's like, trade the farm for Ramsey. Do it, do it, do it. And me and you preached, and we can agree, disagree, and I don't know what your thoughts are here, but we always know that the Ravens value and love their picks, especially Eric DaCosta, EDC, as we call him here. We love our picks, and he even warned us when he took over for Ozzy, we want to build a winner through the draft. That's how he loves to do it. He doesn't trade, you know, everything like the Redskins did for RG3, like they did move on. The Ravens just don't do those kind of moves. They do this kind of move where they trade a underused or not used player in Kenny Young. And Brandon, you had to wonder, Kenny Young's writing was on the wall, or I should say the writing on the wall was for Kenny Young, because Peanut, Patrick Osmore, was not even playing on Sunday due to injury, and Kenny Young didn't even play. So you have to figure, because I know everybody's like, well, I like Kenny Young, right? But they just basically traded an expendable player, just like how we traded a backup kicker for a fifth-round pick, and everybody's trying to speculate because that fifth-rounder was involved. Maybe that was the fifth-rounder that the Ravens got for Vedvik, so it's kind of like they did it for free. You trade a player that wasn't even playing to a proven player, and they much-needed help, a player. But just to, you know, backtrack and do this thing full circle, you had to wonder what the Rams were doing, because Hakeem Talib, their other starting corner, got hurt this week, out for the year. And then the Rams just made a trade, player for player, to trade their other corner to Baltimore. So you're like, what are the Rams doing? They only lost 3 straight. They're still 3-3. You know, they're not mailing it in this year. They're not 0-6. So, and there we have it. So the Ravens land a new corner. The Rams land a new corner. And all is right here in Baltimore, fixing the defense. And and I know it's going to be lost in translation, right? Because Marcus Peters is that very attractive pick here, or I won't say pick, but trade. But we did sign a safety. Remember Bennett Jackson, who was on the team earlier this summer? He was on the Jets practice squad. Now he rejoins Baltimore. So Baltimore lost a safety last week, lost a corner, and now that where they lost 2 safeties, as I was just saying, corners. So they were down a lot of players here, and especially when Deshaun Elliott went down this past Sunday, Tony Jefferson last week, and they rekindled that or resupplied their ranks there in the safety with the Bennett Jackson, who's familiar with the team, and now with Marcus Peters. Dude, this is just vintage Baltimore. And Brandon, I don't know if you know anything about what's going on with Marcus Peters, but just let me enlighten you for a second, man. The Ravens actually made out good in this deal because, like I said, the Rams just traded 2 first-rounders to get Ramsey, and they got to pay him. The Ravens just traded for a corner. Get this, Brandon. Marcus Peters is on his third team in 5 years. He's the last year of his rookie contract, and the accolades just keep coming. I've been seeing stats where he's just up there with some players like a Richard Sherman and Ed Reed as far as interceptions, and the dude is just a playmaker. Right now, dude, Maurice Kennedy was just getting picked on and picked on and picked on, and he was a big weakness in that secondary, and the secondary has been depleted. So right now, this is just vintage Ravens. You're getting, as my buddy Chris Lupton pointed to on my Facebook, he said, this is like the Steve Smith of defense. He's got attitude. He's just a little dude who's angry, and I really think this just fits the bill. This is awesome. I'm tickled to death with this.
Yeah, I have looked at a couple of his highlights. He's not somebody that I have followed very closely, but after, you know, the news that he was coming to the Ravens, I checked out some of his highlights, saw some of his press conferences. He definitely does not hold back with the press. He lets them know what he's thinking. But like you said, he's on his last year of a rookie deal. So really, I have to imagine this guy kind of is a rental. He's not a long-term contract guy for the Ravens, but obviously they're worried about winning right now and making the playoffs for this season. So I think that's what they're bringing this guy in for. It's not for the future. It's for what can he do for this team right now.
Think so?
That's what I think. Yeah. I think because and you know, the Ravens, they're very stingy when it comes to extending contracts. I mean, if they like a guy, of course, they'll go past with that rookie deal. But there are a ton of players they have let go and not extended those rookie deals.
Well, all right. So I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because I kind of, we're going to have some fun here. I disagree with you there. I think, now, I'm not saying I disagree wholeheartedly, thinking that, you know, Marcus is not a one-year rental and they're just going to let him go. But here's the thing. I think Jimmy Smith's time's up here. I don't think the Ravens re-sign him. Jimmy Smith right now is owed $15 million against the payroll. And if he's off hurt, and I think with the Ravens' mantra of getting younger and faster, with Jimmy Smith basically coming off the books next year, I believe, I think this screams, if this is pending how good Marcus Peters fits in the scheme. If he can stay healthy, and I think that this depends on the success of the play of Peters and everything, you're going to see a Jimmy Smith exit, and maybe they give a contract to Peters. I don't know. But Brandon, Joe Flacco's contract comes off the books next year. There's a few other players come off the books, so I think it's going to be good for us next year.
Yeah, I definitely think that they rolled the dice. I mean, the last year of a rookie contract, they could say, well, he played well, but not great, so we're not going to offer him anything. But say he comes in here and blows everybody away, and everybody's impressed, and Jimmy Smith is out the door. I do agree with you there. I don't expect Jimmy Smith to be re-signed. I think he spends so much time on the sidelines, I don't know how you can invest in a guy like that. But, yeah, I think this is all up to this new guy and how he wants to play. I mean, if Peters wants to come in and prove a point and show, yeah, I am that good, I am worth that contract, then, yeah, maybe the Ravens do give him something. But right now, I think the Ravens are going, look, he didn't really cost us anything. He, like you said, we traded a player we weren't really using. We got a draft pick from a trade earlier, so we're not really losing one of our draft picks. So if he doesn't pan out this year, all right, that's the end of it. Contract, we don't have to re-sign him. If he does come in and he really does show off, then yeah, they might offer him like a 3-4 year deal after that. It really, I mean, only the future's going to tell, and it's up to Peters whether or not he's going to get that contract.
Exactly, like we were saying there, it's going to be up to him if he wants to come in and prove that, right? It could be a 1 year rental, you're right, and it doesn't hurt the Ravens. But I'm going to tell you this right now, you might be listening to this and going, well, guys, you know, I really hate the signing, man. I want to Ramsey on the Ramsey. I get it, right? You know, Jalen Ramsey was the premier attraction. But, you know, in retrospect, you know, do you think the Ravens, again, I know if you want to be Jim for today, by all means, pull the trigger. But if you look at what the Rams just gave up for Ramsey, do you want the Ravens to do that? That's mortgaging your future. That's two first rounders the next 2 years. If you go back to this year's draft and interview Eric DaCosta, Eric DaCosta did not like waiting. Did he? I don't think, what was it, the second round? He didn't. Yeah, it was the second round, because remember, we drafted we drafted Marquise Brown in the first round. He waited all second round and then had to wait to the third round to get the Miles Boykin. So, and remember that, you know, there could have been speculation the Ravens traded up, but that would have been obviously giving up value. But Eric DaCosta did not like sitting waiting. The Ravens love their picks, and especially with the misses lately, I can see why people are like, we'll just, you know, trade them anyway, because how many times have we missed in the second or third rounds of all the trades with, like, you know, with all the draft picks of the last 5 years with defense, with pass rushers, and you look at that, and it's like, geez, you know, and I get it. You can slice this many ways, and we can agree to disagree. No one's right or wrong here. You know, it's a great topic of discussion, but at the end of the day, You have to pay Ramsey a mega big contract. There's other people do, like Ronnie Stanley, Matt Judon. So it's like, yeah, you can scream Ramsey all you want, but yeah, we're going to have a lot of cap room next year, but there's other players that have to sign it. And just this week, Ronnie Stanley and Matt Judon were going back and forth on Twitter. Ronnie Stanley was talking about getting paid, and Matt Judon kind of prodded and said, how much? And he said back, enough to pay you, homie, or something like that. So, like, the players are talking. The players are smart. They know. So, and that was the problem with Flacco's contract. Remember? Now, we get it. He won the Super Bowl. He had a hot run. He got paid. You couldn't let him walk because I think old Baltimore would have rioted, but you just can't do that. But how many times have we said this team was handcuffed by that deal, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's ultimately what led to Joe's demise, hurt or not last year. You're not paying the dude $26 million this year if he'd have still played with us. So it's just there's the problem, right? So, I mean, you can love Ramsey all you want, but the fact of the matter is you would have to give up draft picks and money. You know, it's not one or the other. Let the Rams do that. Let other teams do that. This screams a great Ravens deal. It's value. You're getting a proven track record Pro Bowler, a guy who has swagger. He's 26. It's his rookie deal. And that's true, because if it's his last year of his rookie deal and he wants to get paid, whether it's the Ravens or somewhere else, he's going to ball out for us because he wants to get paid his next big contract. He's on his rookie deal, so the Ravens made out. So, I couldn't be more pleased how this transaction transpired. It was a total surprise. But, and also, it's a crazy upgrade for what we had just on the field 2 days ago. You know, 2 days ago, we were depleted in troops in the secondary, and, you know, lucky for us, we didn't have to play the ranks of A.J. Green and John Ross, but, you know, still, you know, there was a couple big plays. We couldn't stop Tate a few times, and Kennedy was getting picked on. It reminded me of shades of Rashad Melvin getting picked on in New England, where it's just that week. Dude, every time Andy Dalton would go back, I would see it. He would go, oh, he's going to Canada. There's 26. Oh, you know, and I called the play call like 10 seconds before it happened. It just, it was predictable. And with this, this just, it's a huge upgrade, and I don't think the Ravens are done.
Yeah, I don't either. And like I said, with this signing, it really showed that the Ravens aren't settling in for just what the rest of the year is going to happen. They know they've got some holes they got to fill. They want to win this year. They are not the Dolphins. They are not trying to lose every single game. They want to win. And that's what we really want to see. It's going to be fun. Week 12 rolls around, and Marquise Peters gets to go up against the L.A. Rams in L.A. on Monday night. So that's
it. Seems like that's the track record, or I want to say track record. I'm trying to search for that phrase, man. That seems like the story. That's it. Storylines and headlines for this year, right? How many games have we had this year? Now adding in the Rams game with the addition of Peters. Of former players. You know, we had Suggs coming back to Baltimore in week two for the home opener. You know, we had, I know it wasn't former players, but we had the Browns come back here in Baltimore since the game last year, and we beat them, and then they clean our clocks out. And then how about, you know, we have this, you know, when we preview the game this week, later in the show, we have Earl Thomas, the newest Raven, going to Seattle, back to Seattle's former team. Marcus Peters on Monday Night Football coming up here, going back to L.A., you know, and then Thursday Night Football late in the year. Granted, if Mosley stuff, we have C.J. Mosley coming back here with the Jets and a few other. So there's a lot of storylines there this year. So it's, again, added to the ranks of the storylines, man. It just keeps getting better. And it's almost, remember the blood and guts game, the revenge game with Steve Smith? That was fun, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my God. He just went off in that day. And that's what I equated to. I just, we're going to just call this the blood and guts season, because in memory of Steve Smith and out of that, because that's just what it reminds me of. It's, you know, it's that revenge, you know, oh, my team didn't want me and the other team took, you know, took me in. But I heard from sources online, man, Marcus Peters is fired up to be here and I can't wait to his press conference. And Brandon, I really want to not get lost in the sauce here and breaking down the Bengals game, but I'm going to just tell you this. You might ask me if Marcus Peters is going to be intertwined in the game plans. That remains to be seen. We'll cover that later in the show. But, man, we got some good things to talk about there. But, man, breaking news as we have it. Cornerbacks are the topic tonight as the Ravens acquire one and so the Rams. So, the teams are improving and teams are being very active this trade deadline. It's been special, and I'm happy the Ravens are players here and very mega players here. And, hey, couldn't be happier right now. But, dude, after Sunday, I definitely knew a concern was for the pass rush. And, it's been a weekly topic with us here, pass rush and coverage. You know, something's got to give. One's got to give the other. You know, we understand that a cornerback can't cover for 6 to 8 seconds long. You know, with the pocket being clean, we know we can't get to the pass rush and we can't get to the quarterback. Because, I mean, hey, if we can't have a disruptive presence on the field on defense with the quarterbacks, I don't care who's back there. Andy Dalton, if it's coming up, Russell Wilson, and then we got Tom Brady's. We have Super Bowl winners here coming up. I don't care who it is, man. We're going to have a huge problem in our hands if we can't get after them. So, it's nice to see in the fourth quarter this week that they kind of stepped up and got a few sacks there. But I don't know about you, man, but I mean, I'm happy with the win, obviously, but this left me more to be desired. What did you think overall?
This past Sunday's game, it was – the response I saw online was a lot of fans being angry that the Ravens didn't just completely wipe the floor with this winless team that they were up against. But like we brought up last week, the Bengals have kept it close in every single one of these games. So I was not surprised, but there is a lot of stuff that the Ravens need to work on. What about the start – to the Sunday game? I had somebody tweet me. I had to watch the game on a DVR because I was out with my god kids, but they tweeted me and said that may be the craziest start to a game I have ever seen in my life. And when I go home and I watch it, yeah, that was very un-Raven like to see the way that game started, and it worried me. But at the same time, the Ravens did play the entire game after they kind of were rudely awoken, I guess, up to the day. They kind of they were able to get a lead and never let go of it, which was nice. So, yes, there are definitely things that need to work on both sides of the ball. But what was the atmosphere like for that first kickoff to the game? I can't imagine everybody going crazy and then seeing that return, and then I kind of felt like the stadium went silent there for a little bit.
Oh, it sure did, man. You could hear an absolute pin drop in the stadium. It was like, dude, I mean, and you get it. You know, people are getting their drinks, food, trying to get to their seat. 10 seconds into the game and you let the opening, I mean, everybody's fired up, you know, we're all there, you know, get fired up. The intros happened, the videos, we're all, yeah, kickoff, we're on defense first, let's go. And then Tucker kicks it off and he goes all the way down the sidelines and for a score. And of course, we're like, no flags. We're looking for flags. Making me to come back because it's a kickoff, right? And nope, the score stood. It was valid. And Ravens are in 7-0 hole. We're looking around and you got to be kidding me. And like, really? This is how today's going to go? And then I kind of was like, I threw my hands up in the air. I said, well, at least we have all game, right? We got all game to get it back. Let's go down and match the score. And unfortunately, until the end of the game, that was kind of the only points they really scored all day, because they only got the other 3 points on a like for like exchange on turnovers. You know, when Marlon Humphrey got the pick, and then we gave it right back with the Mark Andrews fumble, and they got the 3 points there quickly, and then they got the 7 points late in the game on that drive. So I felt like overall, you know, the resilience of the team, you know, again, you know, the going back to 2012, no weapon, you know, no, you know, with Ray Lewis's war cry there, you know, again, you know, oh, they return the kickoff. Here we go again. And, you know, the Bengals are going to come in here and beat us. No way. And then, you know, it's going to really look bad. And they would start off bad. obviously started real bad and ugly, but the Ravens, dude, resilience. They came back firing away and scored a good amount of points before that. And I just felt good. You know, you had to feel like even though they did let that play happen and it was actually detrimental to the morale, I was like, great, you know, right off the bat, right? And again, Justin Tucker, man, let's kick the ball to the end zone and allow for those automatic touchbacks and put on the 25. Why allow them to run it out? And it just shows you that play's still dangerous. If you don't kick it out of the end zone or make them take that knee in the end zone to get on the 25, you know what's going to happen. They're going to – and it caught the Ravens all surprised, you know, and they hit them right in the mouth, and I think they responded well.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely did respond well. But this was a different kind of Ravens team than we have seen in the past, mostly because there were a lot of missing pieces. How do you think the Ravens did without Hollywood on the field and without Peanut on the field? I kind of feel like they maybe saw this injury coming with Hollywood, and they were able to adjust throughout the week. But that deep ball, that deep threat was not there, and that definitely hurt Lamar in the long run.
I think it did too, man. I mean, right away, the big play, explosive plays weren't there. The Ravens, I felt, were very methodical in the way they approached the offensive game plan with new Hollywood. And that, you could say that's a concern, right? Because there's no home run threat. If it's only Hollywood and that's it and he's out of the game, it takes away that stretching the field. That was a concern of mine, you know, going into the game when I learned he was going to be out for Sunday's game. I was like, you know what? All right, back at it. But yeah, man, I just feel like without taking the top off, the defense is stretching the field. That was a key component that was missing on Sunday. And I feel like the Ravens kind of kept everything very I don't want to use the word vanilla. I don't want to go there. But, I mean, they were still explosive this past weekend. But I don't feel like they could have been as explosive as they were. There was a lot of slants there. There was a lot of, you know, over-the-middle intermediate passes. I don't think Lamar, if my memory serves me correctly, I have to go back. I did record the game. I don't think he attempted many passes that were probably over 15, 20 yards. I can't remember where I was like, there was a few times where, again, we rushed the ball very well because we knew that was a weak spot, as we knew going in on Sunday with the players on defense being depleted in their rush defense. And they did attack the rush. They rushed for a lot of yards on Sunday. But I felt like where they could have been very it would have been very helpful to have Brown in there healthy, because I felt like the play action and throwing it deep, I think you would have probably seen shades of the Miami game of week one, where you would have had Marquise running slants and getting open because they had to commit to the run, and Lamar was balling out on the edges. You had Ingram running on the interior, and I feel like that he had to keep that defense honest. And there was a lot of times where I saw them in man in single coverage and cover one, and cover one meaning they had that single safety over top, where if you can have Marquise do it like a double move kind of deal, I feel like they could have gotten Marquise involved in the game plan as far as stretching the field. So that was a big part that was missing on Sunday, and I felt like you can definitely see the effects of it. But I felt like overall it was a performance that left me desired more. And meaning by that, Brandon, if you look at the stats, you could probably agree more times than not that if you look at the stats of the game and the time possession of the game, that the Ravens probably won this by at least 20 points, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. The Ravens definitely, I feel like they could have done more if they would have had everybody all hands on deck. It just, they were missing pieces. And I think this was one of the things they were a little worried about when they drafted Hollywood. You know, he's definitely there to stretch that field. And if he's not there, your whole game plan changes. Staying on the offensive side, though, what did you think of Mark Andrews? He tried to hurdle a guy, ended up being a fumble. We've seen Nick Boyle do this in the past. I don't think Hayden Hurst has done this, but Mark Andrews, Nick Boyle, they both are okay doing the hurdle of a defender, but this time it didn't work out with Mark Andrews. He says he's going to continue to do it. What do you think? Is it something that the Ravens should continue to do? Is it something he's got to work on to hold on to that ball? What did you think of that hurdle and then a fumble?
Well, initially I was like, perfect timing, right? And I say that sarcastically because the Ravens finally got a tip ball their way. They finally got something to go their way. You know, they had the tip drill interception right at the goal line to stop the drive initially for the Bengals. Marlon Humphrey got it. He's been balling out for us this year. And what I was really concerned is we were driving, we were going towards midfield. It was a great pass. I think it was going for a first down at least for Moore to Andrews, and he had the hurdle. And when it went live, I mean, we're all upset, right? Like, oh, no, you know, and hurdling. And, of course, everybody's like, why do they all got to jump? And it's everybody, not only him, but Hurst and Nick Boyle and then the tight ends before him. I can't remember if – I'm sure Pitta did it, and I know Todd Heap did it. And I even was joking with some of the fans that sit around me. I said, Heap did it, and she goes – and the fan and she sits next to me. She's like, don't you talk about my Todd Heap like that. I'm like, you know he leaps. Dude, don't even start that. You know he tried to make a play, and then you know what the topic was after that? And I'm going to pose the question to you. Which was worse, Ed Reed lateraling or are these tight ends hurdling? What do you think?
I mean, Ed Reed's one of the best ever. He's a Hall of Famer, so I don't know if I can really say that's worse.
Well, yeah, I get your point there. It was kind of funny to say that. We were all like, I don't know, because it's the same thing. Every time Ed Reed picked it off, it was like, don't lateral it. And it was always like, it was just that the thing that just happened. Every time he picked it off, and he'll tell you every time, oh, I was trying to make the play. You got to score. You got to make the play. I was trying to pass it off, extend the play.
And
I feel like with looking at it initially when it happened live, man, I was like, at least if you're going to leap, protect the football. But then when I got home and saw the highlights of it, I didn't know he hit it out with his own knee. I thought a player hit it. So I'm kind of like, well, maybe that was a fluke. I don't think they're going to stop hurdling. But I did read on Twitter, as I sometimes do in live games, because I don't see stuff on TV. I think Jameson Hensley is the one that reported. He said after the fumble, Mark Andrews went up and down the line on sidelines and apologized to all the players. And it was on me. And now hitting it out with his knee could be something that's avoidable. It's a fluke play, but I say protect the football. We can say stop hurdling, but I feel like they're still going to make plays. But I say this. I don't like the hurdling when he did it, when he threw himself up in the air and was like, I think if my memory serves me correct, there's like three or four defenders around him. I don't mind your hurdling if you're trying to hurdle one defender and then trying to gain more yards. Like there's that one guy that's trying to tackle you low and you jump high and you make a miss and it's a great athletic play. But it's like, it's just something in these tight ends where it's like, I don't know. It's like little boys in a pile of leaves. You just got to jump. I don't know. But, hey, you can't fault them for trying to make a play, but they got to do it smarter. And Mark Andrews, it was on him, and it cost him 3 points.
Now, the next 2 weeks, I don't know if that kind of stuff is going to fly. You've got the Seahawks and you got the Patriots. Of course, there's a bye week in between, but those are the next two opponents. But the big thing, the glaring thing, was that the Ravens, they committed 10 penalties for 81 yards. I mean, that is, and then again, the fumble and the return on the opening kickoff. Those things are going to kill you against the two teams coming up next, because a lot of this stuff happened against a team that's 0-6. Now you're going to go up against two of the best teams in the NFL. Those 81 yards, man, you are gifting those two teams wins if you're going to continue those kind of penalties.
Yeah, it is, man. I mean, you gotta cut down on the mental mistakes. And I know we can talk about the refs and penalties, and we know the NFL.
It has been a horrible year for referees.
Man, and again, you know, we can address it week to week. We can get frustrated and mad about it, but it just seems like I don't know what the NFL's got to do and what's got to give, man, because it's like how bad – I mean, I would love to just sit there with an NFL official and Goodell or somebody up high and go – and just sit there and watch Red Zone all day with them and go, do you see what's going on? Like, what are you going to do about it? I feel like they had this stupid knee-jerk reaction after the blatant missed opportunity to send the Saints to the Super Bowl last year. And then now because of that, we got to deal with the stupid challenging penalties now and pass interference and if it was or wasn't an effective play. And I'm like, the NFL, man, I mean, again, and I read a lot of good tweets about it, and I echo what some people say. I didn't save them, so I'm paraphrasing here, but I've seen a lot of tweets that said this. The refs are god-awful where you want to stop watching the game, but it's the NFL and you know you're not going to stop watching. So you almost would have – they would almost have to play flag football for us to stop watching because you know it. As bad as the calls are, you're invested, you're a fan, you got fantasy football, you're not going to stop watching. So again, I'm sober. And I've been sober for a long time. I'm going to use this analogy if I may. You probably heard it. people who drink a lot and get a hungover. Oh, I'll never drink again. There's a drink in their hand the next day. So it's the same crap. It's, oh, I'm going to turn the game off. I'm not watching this crap. Yeah, you are. You're going to watch Thursday Night Football. Shut up. Like, just stop lying. So, but it's become, again, we said it last week, these calls have become bigger than the game. It cost the Lions the game last night. It was blatant, obvious, and it's just like, really? And I want to hear your point, because a few people said this in the stands, like, made me think about this part of it. I feel like the NFL sort of half WWE and half not, because obviously you can't script plays like the Julian Edelman catch in Super Bowl 51. You can't script plays like the David Tyree catch. You just can't do that, right? But I feel like someone said this when the Bengals scored at the end of the game for the touchdown, and suddenly all of a sudden the Ravens are getting penalties, whether they were warranted and they were real penalties or fake. Here's what was brought up in the stands. The Ravens were 11-point favorites, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were leading by 13 points at that time, right?
Right.
And I felt like that drive kept the drive alive and it allowed the Bengals to score. I felt like the fans around me basically led me to believe, and now I'm kind of thinking about this, that the fix was in, like, Vegas to allow the Ravens not to cover. It was a money thing. Because if there's money on the Ravens to cover, maybe there was a lot of money on the Bengals or maybe there was a lot of money on the other way that the Ravens weren't going to cover and still win, which they didn't. So as soon as that happened, I said that just made the Ravens not cover. So I'm like, wow. So you have to think of it from a monetary standpoint of Vegas, like with sports betting. Maybe there's something to be said there. I don't know.
Yeah,
but it's a good point to think about.
A team's going into Vegas, I think next year, that kind of stuff is going to be huge on people's minds. I mean, this year, who knows? Maybe refs are trying to get that last few bucks in.
But it's bad.
It's really bad.
But it's not just the Ravens game. It's everywhere. And that's, and again, you can preach other refs again and again, but it's every game I've watched. It seems like there's something going on. And I mean, in the last few weeks, it's just, dude, it's bad. And we can sit here and talk about it, but we all know it's got to stop. And I don't know what the NFL – I would love to know what the NFL is going to do. I don't think they're going to do anything to hold them accountable. A lot of people are like, yeah, the refs get evaluated. I don't care. They evaluated, it's evaluated. They need to be let go. And it's like, here, I don't know if these are the full-time refs or what's going on, but how are you the NFL? You are a juggernaut, and you can't hire full-time people that know the rules of the game, and that's what I think about. I think the rules are so stupid, and I'm not even a player. I couldn't imagine being a player. I probably would quit playing because I think less is more, Brandon. It's if you have less rules and less things going on, I feel like it would be a cleaner game. But because there's so many rules and so many interpretations of what you cannot do, it's just slowing down the game. The pace is different. You're expecting a flag on every like the kickoff I alluded to. The Bengals returned it. I'm like, is there yellow laundry on the field so they can draw it back? Oh, there's a flag. Like, you're looking for something. Like, or the Ravens stopped the Bengals on third down. Oh, is there flags to keep the drive alive? Or, you know, the Ravens stalled. Oh, is there a flag on the defense? It's just almost like you're hoping for that bailout, and it sucks, and it's affecting the game. And I felt like at the end, whether, again, I have to go back and watch it, it's all blur because obviously I'm in the moment. I'm angry because the Bengals are driving. I'm like, no. But, whether they were bad calls or good calls, the penalties and the mental mistakes got to stop. I mean, 10's way entirely too much. I want no more than 4 to 5 max in a game. You know, give them one penalty a corner. I don't care if it's offense or defense. You know, one penalty a quarter, that's fine. Four to five penalties a game average, that's acceptable, man, because you can't play perfect football. Someone's going to be holding. Someone's going to be doing something stupid. It happens. It's human error of the game, right? But I feel like the Ravens – looking at the stats here, man, that's what I wanted to get to. The Ravens doubled them up 2-1 on yardage. They had 40 minutes to 20. It was 39-42 to 2018. Let's call it 40 to 20. So they doubled them up one time possession. They doubled them up on total yards, and they only won the game by 7. I felt like they were alluding back to my statement, a lot more to be desired. What about finishing drives, which they started doing that earlier this year? What about earlier in the game when they finished the drive with Mark Ingram? You know, you get down there, first, second goal inside the 5. What is up with this play calling? I thought Marty Mordenweg came back on the sidelines, man, or even Matt Cavanaugh. I don't know, but you're bringing back some old duds here, and You know, what is it with – it's like they swallow the playbook and forget how to play call plays. It's – you know, it's not that hard. You're running it all over the Bengals. You can't call an option, a run option play with Lamar. You can't run Lamar out. I mean, Lamar just ran it 20 yards for a score in the corner of the end zone early in the game. You can't call a simple run or even Mark Ingram up the middle. So that was a concern. Maybe it's how bad the line is. I don't know. But I chalked that up to play calling. And again, that kept them in the game, and it ultimately could have cost them. So they got to finish drives, and they got to clean up the mental mistakes, man, if they want to get better.
And they're going to have to. I mean, they have Seattle and the Patriots knocking on their door. So, I mean, there is no time to – you don't have time to get better. You got to do it now. It's now or never. You've got to get those wins because you've got a lot of you've got a lot of great teams you're about to go up against. So – last thing I think we should probably talk about this last game is Deshaun Elliott. Looks like he is out for the year, for the rest of the season. He's a safety, and he was taken out in the fourth quarter. What do you think? Does this Peters deal come if Deshaun Elliott is still playing?
I think that's a great question. I think it does because Deshaun Elliott is still at the end of the day, he's a safety. And I know the Bennett Jackson signing helped bolster that, as we alluded to, but we lost Tony Jefferson and Deshaun Elliott. Right. So I think the Marcus Peters signing helped the corners because, number one, we still have Jimmy out right now for the time being. And even if he comes back, it's not like he's come back like nothing ever happened. He's probably not going to be 100. That means he's cleared to play football at full speed, but he's not going to be 100%. Right. I mean, I hope he's near 100%, but you got to be kidding yourself. You're going to think Jimmy Smith will walk out there and, like, nothing's wrong. Like, he's got rust. He's got to get back into it. And I feel like, especially how bad Kennedy played, it was god-awful. And I feel like this was a depth thing, and it helped the secondary as a whole. And yeah, we know Marcus Peters doesn't play safety, but we needed safety help. So I really feel like this – helps everybody as a whole. But yeah, I still feel like the Peter signing would have happened if Deshaun Elliott didn't get hurt, because then we're even that much better. Then you have a healthy safety there, and everything's fine. But that's why Bennett Jackson got added earlier today, because everybody's like, what's up with that? Who's Bennett Jackson? I had to refresh people. I actually picked him to be on the 53-man roster, and I was actually surprised he didn't make it. But that alludes to bringing him back. He knows the system, knows the playbook, and welcome back Bennett Jackson. Again, he's not the world beater. He's not all pro safety, but hey, no, he's better than what we have. And obviously because we're depleted and we have injuries. And if you look at the secondary of when the season started versus it now, having these two players today and Jackson and Bennett Jackson and Marcus Peters, it's leaps and bounds better than what we had. And it's just filling in the ranks and adding that depth back to the once strong secondary that we thought we had, the best in football.
So do you think Kennedy is officially done?
I think so. Just what I saw on Sunday was absolute garbage.
Yeah.
Again, I don't run the team. If it were me, I wouldn't be surprised if I get a tweet or an update from the Ravens that he got cut today or tomorrow or by the end of the week. If he's still on the team, he might be in a practice squad or riding the pine and maybe just back up. I don't think if anything, he's going to be a part-time role. I don't think he's going to start for the Ravens anytime soon. He shouldn't, but remains to be seen. And that's another thing, man. No, how is the cornerback situation going to look when you have a healthy Jimmy coming back? Because you got Marlon, you have Brandon Carr, you have Jimmy, and now Marcus Peters. You can only pretty much put two DBs out there unless you're doing a nickel package or something where you're putting more DBs on the field for a big pass play than a run play. But I still think, obviously, Marcus Peters, if he's not going to be a starter – everybody's like, why would you bring him if he's not a starter? Well, there's depth problems. Just because you're listing the starting lineup don't mean you're going to play majority of the game. It's happened already. I mean, Seth Roberts was in the starting lineup week one and announced as a starter for the home opener, and you didn't see him after that. So just because you're listed out there, it don't mean it. So no, I really feel like it's going to be a great combination no matter who's there. But just getting Jimmy back anyway just makes it that much more better. And speaking of that, I expect Jimmy to, from what I heard the reports, I expect him to basically practice. Basically, by the end of the week, start to build in. I heard he looks good in movements, but that's what the media is saying around here in Baltimore. And I expect him not to play on Sunday. I expect them to rest Jimmy because we have the bye week after that and to get ready for a huge matchup in Sunday Night Football when Tom Brady and the defending champions come to town. So I feel like that would definitely be well, because why rush Jimmy back for one game and then we have 2 weeks off? Let him fully heal and get 3 weeks to prepare, or two full weeks to prepare instead of 1 week, or 3 weeks, yeah. So I feel like, you know, the way it's going to fall, and that's why I love the addition of Marcus Peters, right time, and it's perfect timing because of that situation.
Yeah, I agree. It is perfect timing, and I do agree that we're not going to see Jimmy Smith until the Patriots game. Makes no sense to bring him back up against Seattle and then have a bye week. Why take that risk of re-injuring him? So get him to come back up against Tom Brady and the Patriots. So let's talk about this Seattle game. They are moving to the West Coast. Seattle, on Reddit here, it says it's a 1 o'clock game. I'm almost positive it's a 4:30 game on the West Coast. I could be wrong, but I could have sworn the start time was 4:30. But this is a sort of a homecoming for Earl Thomas. He's officially a Raven. He came from the Seattle Seahawks. What's it going to be like, do you think, for him to be walking in? I mean, he was a huge part of that organization. What's it going to be like for him to be walking on enemy lines at this point?
Dude, it's going to be, again, you're alluding back to it, Steve Smith, blood and guts. It's that revenge factor. I think for him walking in the stadium on Sunday, it's familiarity, right? That's what he's known for 9 years. He won a title with them. And we're speaking to Earl Thomas here. I feel like he's going to know. He's going to zone in. And not that he's not been prepared before, but I think this is where, you know, you're really going to see. And all the focus is going to be on him, right? All the media is going to be talking about that. That's all you're going to hear is, you know, how he is exit from Seattle and how the whole transaction went down and he broke his leg and he wants to come back and prove himself. And they let him go. And I really feel like it's that extra oomph, right? It's that, you know, not that the Ravens need extra edge on the road, but I think that this is that extra, it's like that Space Jam, Michael's special juice. You know, it's like, now I know it's just water, but you think it's not? Yeah, I think it's going to be something of that nature where it's like, it's going to be that extra thing that gets him over the hump on this one and extra jolt on defense, especially. And I hope they don't play too excited, but I think Earl Thomas, it's almost like that just eagle eye focus. He's going to bring that to the defense, and he's going to say, hey, and I think him being right now the defensive leader with this team, I feel like truly everybody's going to rally around that, feed off of that, and that energy. He's going to go. And I feel like he wants to play his best and not let any big plays go by, because I guess he wants to stick it to his old team and say, you know what? You know, he knows the offense. And again, alluding back to former players against their teams, yeah, he might give tips and tidbits against Russell Wilson, but you don't think that the Seahawks are going to counter that, saying like, well, you know, Earl Thomas is probably going to spill some beans here and some knowledge and wisdom, so let's counter that. So they're professionals, they're scheming. Earl's probably going to say, hey, listen, these are his tendencies, here's his strengths and weaknesses. They're going to watch film on him. They know what's at stake, and it's going to be a huge game on the road come Sunday in Seattle, man. But I think this Earl Thomas coming back there is definitely going to add to the not only huge game it is already, but just so much flavor involved with that. It's going to really be energizing.
Now, the Seattle quarterback, Russell Wilson, I mean, he's playing some of his best football he has in many years. I mean, he's looking absolutely fantastic. He's got a great young receiver that he seems to be really gelling with. We talk about Earl Thomas. We're talking about the defense. I mean, how quickly are they going to have to get to Russell Wilson? I feel like the more time you give that guy, the better he's going to be. So how do they keep Russell Wilson on his toes?
Dude, I think what they're going to do is how they play quarterback contain, right? He's not a Lamar Jackson. He can't run it like that fast, but he is a mobile quarterback. He will beat you with his legs, and I feel like how they're going to really beat them in Russell Wilson's scheme is really have that quarterback contain. You can't let him extend plays, get outside the pocket, and make those running throws where if the pocket breaks down and the coverage is, that's where they're going to get bit on Sunday. As far as, let's say, if they try to blitz, and I say try because of the pass rush has not been there, and Russell rolls out to the right or left, let's say he's right because he's right-handed and he throws on the run, that's where the Ravens are going to get hurt, and I think the screen passes are going to be something to watch out for. But they need to set the edge, and the pass rush is going to be a focal point. Not only the secondary, because they need to stop the passing attack of Wilson and company, but I feel like if they don't do a quarterback contain in some way, somehow, it's going to be a long day. They got to keep an eye on them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, looking on the offensive side of the ball, I mean, I feel like there's two different offenses you have to prepare for. There's one with Hollywood Brown and there's one without. And depending on if he's playing there or not is going to depend on what our quarterback's going to do. I mean, like we said, you know, he's a dual threat. But without Marquise Hollywood Brown there, there's a good chance you're going to see Lamar maybe running a little bit more, throwing shorter passes. So what style of game is going to help this offense? Is it going to be a team that can stretch the field, or are they going to want to keep the game moving, short passes, just kind of like, you know, stomping down the field at little by little?
Well, I want a mixture. I don't think it's going to be one all in or the other all in. I think it's going to be a mixture of both. Now, that's an intriguing point because I have yet to see what Brown's status is for Sunday. I know he was out this week. He wasn't even dressed. I don't know if that means they're going to rest him fully and get him back for this stretch run after the bye week, because you have a Jimmy Smith coming back. Marquise is hurt. It's almost like I kind of have a feeling the Ravens are going to rest him, try to get by without a Brown for one more week, give him another 2 weeks to get ready for the New England Patriots Sunday night, have all hands on deck for this stretch run, and show the world that we're going to bring everything against Tom Brady and company. So that's the way I see it. If he's healthy enough, I think if he's a healthy player this week, he's going to play Sunday. I feel like if it's anywhere on the fence, questionable-wise, the Ravens are going to do the smart thing and keep him out, and hopefully they can do enough. If he's out, obviously the big playability and the home runs, as we talked about, go away. There's not a player that scares me on this offense that can do that, and that's concerning in its own right. They started to get Miles Boykin worked into the Bengals game, right? They ran a great slant route, and I felt like this team has underutilized slant routes, especially after week one, where Marquise ran a nice one and took the top off the defense. I feel like the scheme's got to move the chains. You know, they got to keep getting first down after first down. That's what really helped them on Sunday. The Ravens, again, achieved almost 30 first downs. They had 26 of them. When you're moving the chain game 26 times up and down the field, that's giving them work. I want them to work the chain game a lot. And when you're moving chains, extending plays and extending drives, that's going to be key. Ball control, keeping Wilson off the field with this running attack. Now, both teams feature that running attack. Chris Carson on the bench. On the Seahawks, I should say, and Rashad Penny, I know he's had a down year. Chris Carson's the premier back. But here's the key. The Ravens against the Joe Mixon and company, the Bengals had 14 rushes for 33 total yards the whole game, bro. 33 yards rushing they held the Bengals to. So if they can hone in on that rushing attack and make the Seahawks one-dimensional, again, that could be the double-edged sword, right? It could be great, and it could also be scary because this team can't cover. But again, with the additions of the secondary, they still need that pass rush. But I felt a little confident in the defense because, hey, they finally got a couple things we never heard of on this team in a long time. Sacks. They sacked the quarterback, and not only that, but they did it right. No bad penalties, nothing like that. So now I feel like if this team can create pressure on Wilson and make the team one-dimensional by shutting down the run and create those schemes, keep everything contained inside and no big plays. Big plays that killed this team and drive extenders. If it's third and long, when I mean third and long, third and 10, third and 12, third and 20, do not let them get the first down. I don't care if it's by pass, penalty, run. Do not let them get that at all costs, please, because that's what kills it. It kills momentum, especially if you stop them on first and second down. It's third and long. You know, obviously our crowd's not going to be in it because it's a road game, but that's usually when a home game is. Third and long, the crowd's going crazy. And then what's worse is you silence the home crowd like the Bengals did when they extended drives, and it's first down. You're like, ugh, and you're deflated, and you don't feel like cheering because you're all complaining about the play previously. Now, we get it. They got to take them out early, and I really feel like if the Ravens don't start out fast and furious in this game, it's going to be a long Sunday afternoon out in Seattle. They need to get out front, get out ahead, and put the pedal to the metal on ball control offense is what I'm looking for. If Brown don't play, it's going to be a lot of those intermediate pass plays.
Now, without Brown, let's just hypothetically say they do sit Brown, they're going to be cautious and not have him play, give him 2 weeks, 3 weeks off to get prepared for the Patriots. Can the Ravens afford to do that, though? I mean, you have the Patriots coming up, you have the Rams, you have the 49ers, you have the Bills. All those are very good teams this year. Yeah, you've got, you know, Houston, who is so-so. You've got the Bengals and the Jets. But there's a lot of winning teams that they're about to face. Can they afford to take a gamble and not have, you know, their ace squad on the offense against the Seahawks and still come away with a W?
Dude, you know what I think about the scheme? Again, they came away with the W because I felt like they did enough. And I feel like if they can kind of do that and a little bit more against Seattle, I think that's a blueprint for success. My problem is again, going back to the stat sheet from last Sunday, if they were to do the same thing this Sunday, you would think they blew the Seahawks out of water. These close games, they got to know when to put it away. And I think that's the recipe for getting the W out of Seattle in this huge road win and putting a team in a position at 5-2. That would just bode well. And I feel like if they had those mental collapses and the three and outs and don't sustain drives, again, you know, not doing the fundamentals and not doing the things that create the successive recipe for football, I really feel like in alluding to that and in putting it full circle, what I wanted to touch on too is creating turnovers. Mm-hmm. And with the additions of the Marcus Peters and I know Ben and Jackson, that's what I want to see created. And what's hurting that is the lack of the pass rush, because if you can't be disruptive and in the backfield and make a quarterback uncomfortable, he's going to get comfortable and sit back there and pick us apart. And I feel like if the Ravens need to get back to disruptive defensive football, creating the turnovers, and I know they got one go their way, the tip ball, interception, but what I'm excited for this team is what they've created with these additions. LJ Ford, Josh Bynes coming back. Those guys have been integral pieces, and I felt like they fit right in. And I'm hoping Peanut comes back on Sunday. That's going to be a welcome addition. And it's interesting to see what the Ravens are going to do, right, with these three players. Speaking of Brown, Peanut, Patrick Osmar, and as well as Jimmy Smith, are they going to work them in the game plans to try to get them here, get the quick W, get them some work, and then rest 2 weeks for the bye week? Or are they going to say, you know what, we have formidable enough teams or formidable enough roster right now to rest you guys completely for 3 weeks? Hopefully we can get out with a W, and I hate to use the word hope, and I hope the Ravens wouldn't do that, but it remains to be seen how this week, again, we're getting it a little bit early this week, being it's Tuesday. Injury report first comes out tomorrow, and then obviously the final comes out Friday. You know, we'll see how it goes this week and see who practices. Their off days are usually Tuesdays as we record, so it's downtime, and they ramp up practices. So when that list is sent out tomorrow and we post that, you know, who's practicing, who's not, who's held out, you're really going to get to see. Because like last week, when Brown didn't practice Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, when a player don't practice all week, that's pretty much a huge indicator that they're not going to play on Sunday. So if you hear they're limited in practice, they were a full go, then it leads you to believe, okay, good. So we're going to really see what the rubber meets the road here as far as, you know, when the players get involved in the practices. So let's stay tuned on that during this week. But again, recipe for W. They just got to do it. They got to do what they did on Sunday cleaner. I know it's the Bengals. They got to do it against Seattle, but a lot better and cleaner. I want more. You know, that's what's got to happen on Sunday. And this is an all important one because Seattle's balling out. Ravens are balling out. This is going to be a marquee matchup.
All right, so I think we've reached that part of the show where we have to actually make our official predictions, our scores, who's going to win, who's going to lose. So let's go through that, Josh. Who do you see officially winning this game, and what's the score?
Officially putting my stamp on this and winning this game, I will. Unfortunately, I'm going to call it a Ravens loss here in a close game, 27-24. Of course, with anything, I hope I'm wrong, but and you can't win them all, and you got to lose some. And I really feel like the Ravens are going to do just enough, but I think Russell Wilson's going to be that much better and cleaner. But the newest additions, let's see what happens this week. I really hope the Ravens prove me wrong, but it's going to take a lot to win in Seattle. If this was a home game, I probably would have it flipped to 27-24 Ravens. It's just that that atmosphere hurt. It's against. They're known for being the 12th man for a reason. I know Baltimore is known for being loud, but you know, I just don't think the Ravens can do enough. And again, with all the question marks with the injuries, is Brown going to play? Is Peanut going to play? What's Jimmy's status on Sunday? And speaking of that, before I ask your prediction, speaking of our newest Raven, Marcus Peters, this is per Josanna Anderson of ESPN. This is her tweet as of this evening. I'm told current plan is to work, cornerback Marcus Peters into practice Thursday and Friday, and for Peters to play Sunday versus Seattle. Ravens are expecting Peters to arrive into Baltimore late afternoon, early evening Wednesday after taking care of some family things. Told he was fired up per source, and we're fired up to have him, Brandon. So there's the answer. So it sounds like that was going to pose the question to you, but it sounds like Marcus Peters is going to get playing time. And it's actually surprising because my angle on that was going to be, well, maybe they'll bring him in, get him up to speed in the playbook, but probably not give him any playing time and get him up to speed until the New England games. That would give him 3-4 weeks to prepare as a Raven. But, hey, get him in there quick and early. Get him some exposure, see what he can do, and then you have 2 full weeks to prepare for Tom Brady and reload. So, I didn't expect that to happen, but hey, I'm okay with it. Bring him right in and let him impact right away.
Yeah, absolutely. You want him to do that. You want to see that. And yeah, there's a bye week coming up, but the more experience he can get, the better ways to gel right in. And he's going to get thrown right into the fire up against this winning Seattle Seahawks team. So my prediction for the game, unfortunately, I also have to say I don't think the Ravens are coming away with a win this week. Again, I agree with you. If it were in Baltimore, then yeah, I think things might be a little bit differently. But the fact that they're going to Seattle, it's a 4:30 start. It's a long flight to adjust to. You're adjusting to the time change. It's a later game. You know, nothing is in the Ravens' favor. Plus, you have a bye week coming up. You know, you got to remember that time in school when it was before Christmas break. I mean, that week before Christmas break, you didn't want to work. You didn't want to do anything. So,
of course not.
I think the Ravens are going to be the same way. So, I'm going to say that the Seattle Seahawks win 27-17.
27-17. All right.
And then hopefully, you know, a bye week comes in. These guys can get rested up. Some people that are injured can come in. And then, boom, again, straight into the fire up against the Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. So that'll be a fun one to talk about. But unfortunately, this week, I think you and I are both in agreement. The Seattle Seahawks are probably coming away with a win. So, Josh, have we covered everything for this Ravens The Call episode?
Yeah, man, this has been action-packed. Breaking news, all kinds of stuff going on. But I tell you what, man, week 6 in the books, 4-2 record. I'm going to get a hearty quote the Raven nevermore on this one.
All right, guys, if you want to continue the conversation with Josh or I, you can. It's real easy. All you have to do is tweet to either one of us. You can tweet to me at Brando Cash. Josh, where can people tweet to you at?
At always at Italian GQ52.
All right, go over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/thecallpodcast. Like us over there. Whenever a new show comes out, you'll be the first to know. And we're always putting out fun stuff that we find. We actually are covering the XFL a little bit. They had their draft today, and we posted the XFL picture of the quarterbacks. Let us know what you think of those quarterbacks. If you think this XFL experiment sequel, Electric Boogaloo, is going to be an actual thing or not. So let us know what you think there. Now we do the show for free. You listen, stream, and download for free on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player.fm, Overcast, and Google Play Music. All we ask in return is for you to please spread the word about the show. Be social with the show. Write us an Apple Podcast review. And then let people know on Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and Instagram and Reddit and Snapchat and Twitch. Anywhere you are social on the web or with your phone. Say, I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan. I listen to The Call, and you should too. I really hope Patrick Ricard is listening to this episode, because he wished you a happy birthday, and he knows The Call podcast exists, so hopefully Patrick Ricard's listening to us right now.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. It was a pleasant surprise, and let's say thank you to Pat for doing that. It was a fantastic surprise, Brandon. Thank you for all doing that, putting it together, and he wanted to see the Batman, and got it to him, and he responded on Instagram, which is great. So, again, that was fun to interact with Pat, and let's hope we can try to get him as a special guest on The Call, man. It'd be great.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's willing to do that for us. And, that was a lot of fun, and it just adding to it all, man. I always appreciate that. So it was a great birthday surprise, and better late than never, but I'm happy he did it, man. It was fantastic for him to take some time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And if he is listening and would like to come on the show during the bye week, we are more than available for him to do that. So, hey, if you're listening, Patrick, come on to the show. We'd love to have you. Anyway.
Absolutely, my friend. Absolutely. And I want to wrap this thing up, man. In the shakeup of the AFC North, what just happened with how we play the Seahawks, what just happened this past week, how about the Seahawks taking care of some business for us and putting down the Browns?
Love it.
Wasn't that fantastic or what? And that was a crazy game because obviously as us fans, we're following it on the scoreboards very closely. It was 20-3 Browns early and we're like, oh man, now we got to win this game just to keep pace because we can't lose and they win and we're right back to square one tied again, right? Because we had the game lead heading in. So as the game ended, the Browns game was still going on and they had a goal to go fourth and goal situation and the Seahawks stopped them. And I had it on my live on my phone and it was a dead time in the Ravens game. And I kind of got excited and I go, they stopped them. And everybody's trying to, what was going on? I was like, cause the scoreboard didn't update yet. And I'm like, the Seahawks stopped them. They got the ball back. And we're all like cheering in the stands and getting all into it. And then the Browns game was still going on as we got to our cars cause the Ravens game ended. And I put the game on XM radio just as I did. Baker threw the third pick and pretty much sealed their fate. And we were all rejoicing in the parking lot. And just how crazy is that opportunity? You know it's kind of like, okay, we thank the Seahawks for taking care of business, but then we got to turn around and take care of them and handle our business. So it's kind of come around full circle. But hey, the Browns fall. They're 2-4, and that couldn't be any more better for Ravens fans to feel real good. Baker had another three picks on the day. The Browns had two wins in their first six games. They're two games behind the Ravens. It seems like that Browns loss was an aftermath, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Afterthought, sorry. And yeah, it just seems like it just was like, okay, well, now it doesn't matter. You know, we're two games up. Still got a lot of football to play, right? 10 games left in the schedule. But in that, and just wrapping up the AFC North, how about the Steelers? They made the Chargers look so bad on Sunday Night Football, and I even tweeted it. I was like, how were the Chargers a playoff team last year? Because they didn't really lose that many players. It didn't seem like it to me. And they were god-awful against the Steelers. And the Steelers, it still was a close game, but the Steelers got out to a 14-0 lead. But the Steelers won their second game of the year. And they're 2-4 tied with the Browns with two games behind. Browns got the tiebreaker on us being two back. Steelers, we got their tiebreaker, and we still got three divisional games left to play. But the Ravens, after beating the Bengals, they're 2-1 in the division. They're 4-2 on top. You have to feel good, right? I know there's a lot to be left with this team, you know, with the pass rush, the secondary. I know we made some additions, some good additions here. We have some injuries with the Antonio Brown, or not Antonio, but Marquise Brown, obviously, and, you know, Peanut and Jimmy Smith. But you have to feel good that the Ravens sitting at 4-2 have as more wins as all of the rest of the three teams combined. Bengals are 0-6. We play the Bengals again here in the next month. We put them down and out. You know, they're so far back, six games behind. And, you know, and you look at the makeup of this AAC North right now, it's sitting pretty for Baltimore. So you have to, again, take the good and the bad and the ugly, but you have to appreciate, you know, waking up on Monday morning after a Bengals victory and after everything that happened and the Ravens have a two-game lead after 6 weeks in AAC North. You have to feel good about that, man.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ravens are two games ahead. You love to see that.
Absolutely. Any day of the week, two games ahead. And they got to keep pace. And, you know, in wrapping up the NFL, what's happened this past weekend, some surprises. But, Brandon, I got to ask you, how about them Cowboys?
Woo!
What happened there? What? Dude. The Cowboys fans at work were so mad. They were like, oh, no, what's wrong? They were all grumbling and mumbling. I'm like, I would think so after starting 0-3 and you losing three in a row. But not only that, but how about the makeup of the Rams and the Cowboys? They both started 0-3, now they're 3-0, now they're 3-3. I mean, just you're seeing some weirdness going on now with the NFL and the shape of what's going on around the league, man. Not sustaining greatness and the good team separating. And then again, how about the Chiefs wrapping up the NFL? The Chiefs lost. They're 4-2, just like the Ravens.
Yeah.
They lost two in a row at home. That never happened.
That was very surprising.
Very rare. So, again, with the Chiefs falling, the Browns falling, it just made you think. But, again, we play Houston on our schedule. Don't forget that in November. Mm-hmm. Houston's in a month, and they're also 4-2. They're 4-2. So, the AFC, yeah, man, the AFC's dangerous. They got some depth, and it's not only the NFC now, but the AFC's got some firepower. And the Ravens, these teams are on our schedule. We got it past we already got – the Chiefs, I know it was a 5-point loss. We were keeping pace there. No, but you have to look at the makeup of the schedule, and this is why I like what the Ravens are doing as far as moves and trying to get there, because this isn't that rebuild year. They're knowing that, and I don't think this is a one-and-done window, right? But I feel like they know they can make a serious run at this with the division of the state of the AFC North that it's in and where they're positioned right now. They can just get these pieces that puts them over the hump. They're going to be right there, and I really feel like it's going to be a big stretch run here, and they're gearing up for it. And speaking of that, Brandon, the Ravens really have to take it to the Seattle Seahawks. It's going to be one of those. It's going to be one of those games. I feel. I don't think it's going to be blow up by either means for each team. I think it's going to be really closely contested. The Ravens and Seahawks, I feel like they mirror each other. You know, they got that mobile quarterback. Obviously, Russell Wilson's been there. He's a proven veteran. He's got the payday. He's got the ring. He could have nearly had two of them if they just ran beast mode. I still can't forgive him for that. Wow, I still can't. But, you know, talk about play calling blunders in the red zone. But what's done is done, and what's going to happen this Sunday, bear in mind, it is a West Coast game, my friends. So East Coast, we get to relax a little bit and enjoy a later game. It's a 4 o'clock kickoff on Sunday for the Ravens and Seahawks, and I really can't wait to get out. Now it's actually 4:25. Just look. So we got a 4:25 kickoff. So a little later in the evening for us, and then we do a bye week after that. So we just need to really take it to the Hawks and, hey, bow the birds. East versus West Coast. NFC versus AFC. Dude, it's going to be a war in Seattle. We need to tell the 12th man where to go, because the unkindness, as we call them, the Ravens flock, is invading the city of Seattle, and we need to come out with a huge win. I know we predicted the loss, but hey, with our hearts, we always root hard. Baltimore Ravens, are you with me? Flock, are you with me? The call says Baltimore Ravens, let's fly high.
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by Brad Lepore and Daniel Kelly from the DBK Studio. For more information, go to brandocash.com.